Chapter 20. Child and Marriage. I have a question for you alone, my brother. Like a sounding lead, cast I this question into your soul, that I may know its depth. You are young and desire child and marriage. But I ask you, are you a man entitled to desire a child? Are you the victorious one, the self-conqueror, the ruler of your passions, the master of your virtues? Thus do I ask you. Or does the animal speak in your wish and necessity, or isolation, or discord in you? I would have your victory and freedom long for a child. Living monuments shall you build to your victory and emancipation. Beyond yourself shall you build. But first of all must you be built yourself, rectangular in body and soul. Not only onward shall you propagate yourself, but upward. For that purpose, may the garden of marriage help you. A higher body shall you create, a first movement, a spontaneous rolling wheel, a creating one shall you create. Marriage, so call I the will of the twain to create the one that is more than those who created it. The reverence for one another, as those exercising such a will, call I marriage. Let this be the significance and truth of your marriage. But that which the many to many call marriage, those superfluous ones, ah, what shall I call it? Ah, the poverty of soul in the twain. Ah, the filth of soul in the twain. Ah, the pitiable self-complacency in the twain. Marriage they call it, and they say their marriages are made in heaven. Well, I do not like it, that heaven of the superfluous. No, I do not like them, those animals tangled in the heavenly toils. Far from me also be the God who limps here to bless what he has not matched. Laugh not at such marriages. What child has not had reason to weep over its parents? Worthy did this man seem, and ripe for the meaning of the earth. But when I saw his wife, the earth seemed to me a home for madcaps. Yea, I would like that the earth shook with convulsions when a saint and a goose mate with one another. This one went forth in quest of truth as a hero, and at last got for himself a small decked-up lie, his marriage, he calls it. That one was reserved in intercourse and chose choicely, but one time he spoilt his company for all time, his marriage, he calls it. Another sought a handmaid with the virtues of an angel. But all at once he became the handmaid of a woman, and now would he need also to become an angel. Careful have I found all buyers, and all of them have astute eyes, but even the most astute of them buys his wife in a sack. Many short follies, that is called love by you, and your marriage puts an end to many short follies with one long stupidity. Your love to women, and women's love to man. Ah, would that it were sympathy for suffering and veiled deities. But generally, two animals alight on one another. But even your best love is only an enraptured simile in a painful ardor. It is a torch to light you to loftier paths. Beyond yourselves shall you love some day. Then learn, first of all, to love. And on that account, you had to drink the bitter cup of your love. Bitterness is in the cup even of the best love. Thus does it call longing for the Superman. Thus does it cause thirst in you, the Creating One. Thirst in the Creating One. Arrow and longing for the Superman. Tell me, my brother, is this your will to marriage? Holy call I such a will and such a marriage. Thus spoke Zarathustra. Chapter 21. Voluntary Death. Many die too late, and some die too early. Yet strange sounds the precept, die at the right time. Die at the right time, so teaches Zarathustra. To be sure, he who never lives at the right time, how could he ever die at the right time? Would that he might never be born. Thus do I advise the superfluous ones. But even the superfluous ones make much ado about their death. and even the most hollow nut wants to be cracked. Everyone regards dying as a great matter, but as yet death is not a festival. Not yet have people learned to inaugurate the finest festivals. The consummating death I show to you, which becomes a stimulus and a promise to the living. His death dies the consummating one triumphantly, surrounded by hoping and promising ones. Thus should one learn to die, and there should be no festival at which such a dying one does not consecrate the oaths of the living. Thus to die is best. The next best, however, is to die in battle and sacrifice a great soul. But to the fighter, equally hateful as to the victor, is your grinning death, which steals near like a thief, and yet comes as a master. My death, prays I to you, the voluntary death, which comes to me because I want it. And when shall I want it? He that has a goal and an heir wants death at the right time for the goal and the heir. And out of reverence for the goal and the heir, he will hang up no more withered wreaths in the sanctuary of life. Verily, not the rope makers will I resemble. They lengthen out their cord, and thereby go over backward. Many a one also waxes too old for his truths and triumphs. A toothless mouth has no longer the right to every truth. And whoever wants to have fame must take leave of honors betimes and practice the difficult art of going at the right time. One must continue being feasted upon when one tastes best. That is known by those who want to be long loved. Sour apples are there, no doubt, whose lot is to wait until the last day of autumn, and at the same time they become ripe, yellow, and shriveled. In some ages, the heart first, and in others, the spirit. And some are hoary in youth, but the late young keep long young. To many men, life is a failure. A poison worm gnaws at their heart. Then let them see to it that their dying is all the more a success. Many never become sweet. They rot even in the summer. It is cowardice that holds them fast to their branches. Far too many live. And far too long hang they on their branches. Would that a storm came and shook all this rottenness and worm-eatenness from the tree. Would that there came preachers of speedy death. Those would be the appropriate storms and agitators of the trees of life. But I hear only slow death preached, and patience with all that is earthly. Ah, you preach patience with what is earthly. This earthly is it that has too much patience with you, you blasphemers. Verily, too early died that Hebrew whom the preachers of slow death honor, and too many has it proved a calamity that he died too early. And yet, had he known only tears and the melancholy of the Hebrews, together with the hatred of the good and just, the Hebrew Jesus, then was he seized with the longing for death. Had he but remained in the wilderness, and far from the good and just, then perhaps would he have learned to live and love the earth and laughter also. Believe it, my brethren, he died too early. He himself would have disavowed his doctrine had he attained to my age. Noble enough was he to disavow. But he was still immature. Immaturely loves the youth, and immaturely also hates he man and earth. Confined and awkward are still his soul and the wings of his spirit. But in man, there is more of the child than in the youth, and less of melancholy. Better understands he about life and death. Free for death and free in death, a holy naysayer when there is no longer time for yea, thus understands he about death and life. That your dying may not be a reproach to man and the earth, my friends, that do I solicit from the honey of your soul. In your dying shall your spirit and your virtue still shine like an evening afterglow around the earth. Otherwise, your dying has been unsatisfactory. Thus will I die myself, that you friends may love the earth more for my sake, and the earth will I again become, to have rest in her that bore me. Verily a goal had Zarathustra. He threw his ball. Now be you friends the heirs of my goal. To you I throw the golden ball. Best of all, do I see you, my friends, throw the golden ball? And so tarry I still a little while on the earth. Pardon me for it. Thus spoke Zarathustra.